So I find this quite interesting because, you know, it's not only about the measures, but it's also about general level of acceptance and preparedness of people to compromise on their own rights and freedoms, and then their critical assessment, the citizen critical assessment of what is right for them and how far they are willing to go in order to save the other and prevent the pandemic from spreading.
I'm Dominic, and I'm the host of the International Risk Podcast. This podcast is for CEOs, board members, risk and compliance officers, security advisors, and anyone interested in improving operations. In these interviews, we will speak with renowned international experts. If you know me, then you know that I've successfully established operations in some of the most complex environments around the world. Joined by our excellent guests, I'm excited to share with you some useful ideas on how you can help your organization thrive.
They're from citizens in a way that would be dangerous for the whole society. And that is, I think, a really good step on one hand, but on the other hand, I think just like with GDPRs, it will be in the end of the day when the regulation is adopted, a lot of gray areas where the companies that are working on such products would be really not knowing how to apply it.
Today, we're joined by Dr. Mira Suleimanova. She's an expert in international privacy and data protection. Mira holds a doctoral degree in law, and she worked as a legal consultant focusing on international investment protection for more than a decade. Today, she blends her legal background with her affinity for technology, and she's now an expert in international privacy. She works with startups and tech companies, closely collaborating with developers, product designers, and management teams to help them build products with privacy in mind and to navigate the complex landscape of international data protection. In 2019, Mira co-founded a not-for-profit project called Privacy Issues. It started a newsletter that many of you have probably already seen, and this is dedicated to the intricate connection and codependency between privacy and technology. And we'll include links to the privacy newsletter in the show notes. Thanks for joining us today, Mira.
Thank you for having me, Dominic.
There's so many new developments, both technological and legislative, that impact us personally and also the companies that we're leading. Can you share with some of our guests the new issues that you're monitoring and that you're keeping a track of?
Well, we are definitely keeping track of the most recent legislation in terms of global privacy, such as, for example, the draft proposal of e-privacy regulation that has been announced in the beginning of this year. Or, for example, there is a new draft for the artificial intelligence regulation adopted by European Commission. We also definitely monitor recent developments in the field of governmental measures that were imposed by the governments all over the world in terms of management of corona crisis. Of course, we monitor tech companies rolling out new privacy-related updates. And me, as somebody who is consulting startups on a daily basis or who is working with tech companies to help them implement privacy. As a privacy consultant, I work with startups and tech companies on a daily basis, and I also monitor what type of new interpretations came out most recently and how can I help implement or help implementing them within the organizations of my clients.
That's really interesting. And they're certainly all issues that, in fact, is definitely both as private citizens, as well as the companies that we're leading and we're working with. You mentioned some of the initiatives that governments have imposed in their response to the COVID crisis. What about the Green Pass initiative that's certainly well on its way in several countries? I know in Austria, Germany, Denmark, there's been a lot of conversation about that. And, you know, this pass that talks about whether someone's been vaccinated or had a negative test and, you know, the potential implications about not just getting on planes, but is this going to be used at restaurants and museums and sporting events? What do we know about that and what are the implications?
The vaccination passports per se, they are not a new idea. So they have been existing since vaccines has been existing, and it's an efficient tool to keep track of who is immune and who is not. the electronic vaccination passport or electronic health passport is relatively new idea. It is something that would keep record and keep data, sensitive data, medical data of a person to keep track of whether or not this person has been tested or vaccinated. We know that Austria has been pioneering this effort. Within the European Union, it was one of the first countries who said that they will implement Grüne Pass or Green Passport in Austria. Last week, the government has issued a statement that says that the green passports will be implemented as early as end of May, which is basically coinciding with opening of restaurants, public spaces like museums and event venues. I personally think that it's not a bad idea in itself to be able to track and make available the data about the immunity of a person in certain places, but I do think that it represents a serious risk to privacy of individuals and of us in general.
That raises a really important point, and I think we all understand that our medical data is obviously very personal and it's very sensitive. Now, if the Austrian government's going to roll this out by the end of May, has that given the appropriate groups the opportunity to consider the legislation and to review the software to determine if it does contain the right safeguards?
Well, yes and no. On one side, the first draft of the bill that is talking about green passes was not accepted by the parliament in the first reading. And now, last week, it did pass as an acceptable initiative. So I am not sure right now whether there was any public consultations and to what extent, but I do know that there are proponents as well as those who are opposing this idea on the European level, not only in Austria. Main idea or main concern of the privacy advocates in regards with the European vaccination pass or the green pass is that it is not quite clear how the data will be collected and where will it be stored. Will it be one server that belongs to the government with all the sensitive data, and who will have access to this data? If we talk about, for example, mechanisms where at the grocery store you would have to check in and show your green pass to prove that you are immune or not sick, where does this data end up? I think this is the main concern, because that way, if you imagine just on the scale of the city of Vienna, how many shops, restaurants and museums as well as concert venues exist in Vienna, and if during the day I as an individual go around grocery shopping, clothes shopping, and then in the evening to the concert and after to see my friend in the restaurant, just in one day, how much digital trace I will leave, and that just in one day, how many times will I share my health data with different actors. So this data that I extrapolated myself voluntarily, where is the limit with whom this data is being shared? Will I be able then to claim that this data is being given to me in a way that I can share it with others, for example, with other governmental authorities? Will I be given an opportunity to claim to erase it? How in practice will that work? And I guess this is the same. These are the questions that privacy advocates are asking themselves and the government.
And I think they're very valid and reasonable questions. So with that background, what should businesses and consumers be looking out for or considering when it comes to the rollout of these apps, whether it's in Austria at the end of this month potentially, or in other countries that are not far behind?
Well, I think for the businesses, it's very important, especially those that are using these systems to collect data with respect to their visitors or their employees, is to really think of what type of data they would like to collect and for how long they would like to store it. Because under the GDPR, as many people may be aware right now, there are these general principles that regulate the collection and processing of data. And although we are now in the pandemic, in an emergency situation, they are still valid. And one of the principles is, for example, data minimization. As part of data minimization step within an organization, it would be good, for example, to really collect only the data that is necessary and get rid of this data as soon as possible or as soon as it is not needed anymore. If we are talking about tests, for example, and collection of the data in relation to a test of the employees, maybe think about how long is the test valid? Is it valid for 24 hours or 72 hours? And maybe it would be good to install some mechanisms whereby this data is deleted after 24 or 72 hours. As for citizens, probably if it becomes a measure where it is not possible to avoid, probably the best way would be to keep the data in one place, not download applications, not download multiple applications that would facilitate the entry into certain venues or supermarkets. I'm hoping that on the side of the government, there will be just unified outlet that would keep the data also in a way that is possible to have an overview of. So the main problem with this type of data collection is not the data collection itself. The main problem is the risk that once the data is being voluntarily given, how do you protect this data from leaks and from cyber attacks and from possible damages that could be caused by losing the data or compromising the data?
I think that's a really important point you just brought up. And we all know that cybercrime and cyber risks and information protection, they're just such important issues. And you know, whenever we speak to people about risk and companies about risk, cyber risk is generally considered one of the first things that people are justifiably and understandably concerned about. But then at the same time, as we're discussing now, we're talking about giving even more information and putting even more information out there and online. How do we find the balance between maintaining access, maintaining a safe and secure society, and maintaining our protection and information security at the same time?
In the situation, as extraordinary as it is, there is always this conflict between what is necessary to protect the public order and what is necessary to protect the interests of the individual. And there is always this fragile balance between the two. So I think when the government or an organization is installing or implementing certain measures, it is always good to ask, why do we actually need them? These measures, are they going to be potentially effective? What is the reason for collecting this type of data or the other type of data? So I think the balance lies in really having this inquisitive analysis of why do we need it? Why do we need this particular measure? And what would be the consequences of this measure?
That's really interesting. And of course, one of the issues with the Green Pass initiative is it's about proactive. It's about getting ahead of any disease outbreaks. But we've been living with COVID for a long time now, and many of us have been the subjects of or been involved in some sort of contact tracing. Now, there's been a variety of systems around the world that were created and adapted in the wake of the COVID pandemic. Now, China had a mandatory approach, whereas other countries pursued a voluntary contract tracing app approach. But we know some countries like Bahrain and Kuwait and even Norway rolled out some quite invasive COVID-19 tracing apps. What's your opinion about the balance of and the effectiveness of these different apps and the risks? Because we imagine that COVID won't be the last and COVID is not going away soon. When it comes to contract tracing apps, how did you see and what was your opinion of the balance between the mandatory versus the voluntary adoption and the effectiveness of the two?
With contact tracing apps, it's very interesting to observe because in the countries like China, Singapore, Korea, Vietnam, the Asian countries where the acceptance rates in relation to the government or governmental power was much higher, or there is much higher trust into government and its political decisions, people were willing to give up some of their freedoms and they were accepting mandatory contact tracing. At this point, the general consensus as to whether or not these measures or contact tracing, digital contact tracing was effective is that in countries like South Korea and Vietnam, China, it brought results. But I think it is important to understand that contact tracing apps were not the only tool that the governments were using. Contact tracing was used in combination with things like CCTV camera surveillance, manual contact tracing. People were hired specifically to carry out investigative activities to track the individuals who were in either direct contact or in the zones where the rates of infection were quite high. So I think acceptance of the citizens in relation to this type of measures is very, very important. Whereas in Europe, where people were not forced to use this app, the effectiveness rate of the contact tracing apps could not be measured. It's just not possible because not enough people used it and there is no critical mass of information that could be used as a basis for having these conclusions as to whether it helped to stop or slow down the pandemic. So I find this quite interesting because, you know, it's not only about the measures, but it's also about general level of acceptance and preparedness of people to compromise on their own rights and freedoms, and then their critical assessment, the citizen critical assessment of what is right for them and how far they are willing to go in order to save the other and prevent the pandemic from spreading.
I think that's a really important point, that it really does come down to the societal, the consumer, the individual's willingness to get on board and accept that or not. You mentioned that the European Union Commission released a draft regulation on artificial intelligence, and I understand this is the first ever legal framework to actually regulate artificial intelligence. What do we actually know about this regulation, and what should companies and consumers be looking out for?
The regulation on AI has been in discussion for a couple of years now, and this is a very interesting piece of legislation because I think by the time it will be adopted, the AI technology probably will advance much further. Now, the draft regulation is suggesting that it will be as overarching as the GDPR. So any type of technology that would come into European market or would be using the data of the European citizens will be subject to this regulation. Another interesting thing about this proposal is that any type of AI product or software would be subject to scrutiny by a governmental authority if it has potentially high risk for rights and freedoms of citizens. It is not quite clear what would be exactly high risk, what type of technology could be more risky than the other, but it is definitely going into the direction of whether or not this technology has a potential for mass surveillance and citizen tracking or collecting the data from citizens in a way that would be dangerous for the whole society. And that is, I think, a really good step on one hand. But on the other hand, I think just like with GDPR, there will be, in the end of the day, when the regulation is adopted, a lot of gray areas where the companies that are working on such products would be really not knowing how to apply it. This is something to look forward to, I think, and maybe this regulation will definitely create a new market for companies, also for those who are working in the field of consulting the AI, but also for those who are working in the privacy profession, because as we know, AI and machine learning and the technologies where the big data is playing a core role, it is always a risk to privacy. So I think for privacy professionals in this area specifically, there will be a lot of work once the regulation comes into force.
That's very interesting. And it's good to hear that there is already some mention of government scrutiny and oversight of companies and AI technology that may infringe on privacy. For companies that want to be building privacy and data protection into their design from the very start, what does collecting the minimum amount of data necessary and securing and safely storing data actually look like? And how do they go through the design process with privacy in mind from the very start?
When I start working with a company or with a client, I first of all ask what type of data they are collecting and why. And then we sit down and look together whether this type of data or data items that are being collected is really necessary. If we talk about data minimization, we need to think of being able to explain each of the data items that is being collected and processed. If you are, for example, a company that is producing milk and you are selling it through your online shop or online platforms, and you suddenly start collecting data about the size of your clothing or your preference in terms of colors or in terms of other things that you want to buy online, that is absolutely in conflict with the data minimization principle. So everything that is being collected from your consumers needs to have a connection to your business and type of products you are selling. If, for example, there is a need for collecting data for marketing purposes, then there is an additional requirement that would entail consent from the consumers. So put in practice, this is the consent forms or tick boxes that you need to click when, for example, somebody signs up to the newsletter. In terms of storage, I think the important thing is that companies think of how do they store the data. Is it on a physical server or in the cloud? Now, mostly companies keep their data in the cloud because this is the most convenient way of managing the data. But for European companies, I would highly recommend looking into the policies of the cloud providers, especially those that are based in the US, because since the decision of the European Court of Justice in Schrems 2 case, probably a lot of people who are doing business right now, they know about it. The rules for data transfers between European Union and the US have changed. And basically the gist of the decision was that the privacy shield that existed between the US and the EU has been cancelled. And now additional measures need to be in place in order to safely and securely transfer the data between European Union and the US. In practical terms, it means if you are using an AWS server, for example, for storing the data of your customers and you are a company in Europe, it would be necessary to implement a new set of agreements with AWS, because AWS is an American provider and storing data there without additional safeguards would be a breach of GDPR.
And so it's not just where the servers are based, it's also who owns the service and where their headquarters are.
Yes.
Interesting. That's so many different areas that we need to be considering when it comes to information security and privacy protection. Any final thoughts for our listeners, the leaders of companies and risk managers, about what we should be doing to ensure adequate data protection and privacy?
I think the most important thing for the companies to keep in mind today and in general is that there should be a dedicated employee or an officer who would be monitoring and keeping his or her eye on the recent developments in terms of data protection legislation and privacy in general globally. And this person works closely with the management in order to implement changes if it's needed. Finally, companies need to be keeping the level of privacy awareness among its own employees, because at the end of the day, employees are those who are living the privacy program and they are implementing and using the privacy program.
That's a really important point. Thanks for that, Mira. And I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast and sharing this information with our listeners.
I really enjoyed as well. Thank you very much for having me, Dominique.
Wonderful. Well, that was a great conversation with Mira. I really appreciated hearing her thoughts on privacy, new legislation, data minimization, and ensuring that your employees really are living the privacy program within your company. We'll link to Mira's Privacy Issues newsletter in our show notes. Please go to wherever you download your podcasts and give this podcast a 5-star review. Your positive reviews on this podcast and subscribing to future downloads is critical for our success. Thanks for listening today, and we'll speak again next week.